And good afternoon. This is Cass Stutis Davidas, and you're listening to Independent Lithuanian Radio right here on KTYM 1460 on your AM dial, and of course, live streaming audio over the internet at ktym.com. Okay, thanks again for tuning into Independent Lithuanian Radio this afternoon. We opened up here with a little outtake of a sutartinė. Okay, since we like to think of ourselves as having some sort of educational quality to our programming, I'm going to tell you that sutartinė comes from the word sutarte, okay, to be in concordance or in agreement, okay? Say susitarte, sutarte. That means you're in agreement, and they are highly unique examples of folk music. As a matter of fact, very unique to the Baltics and Lithuania in particular. Ancient form of two and three voiced polyphony based on the oldest principles of multi-voiced vocal music. Heterophony, parallelism, canon, and free imitation. Most of the sutartinė repertoire was recorded in the late 19th and early 20th centuries, but sources from the 16th century and later show that this style of singing was important, along with what would be known as monophonic songs, for a considerable period of time. The topics and functions of sutartinės encompass almost all known Lithuanian folk song genres. Work songs, calendar cycle rituals, weddings, family, wartime, historic, other songs. The melodies of sutartinės are not complex. They contain from 2 to 5 pitches. The melodies are symmetrical, consisting of 2 equal parts. Rhythms are typically syncopated, and the distinctly articulated refrains give them a driving quality. You know, the song feels like it's going forward and forward. Folk singers categorize sutartinės into 3 main groups. Okay, I'm going to spare you a lot of this, but, you know, basically there's the trejinės, threesomes, keturinės, foursomes, that are sung by 2 pairs of singers, and so on and so forth. Sutartinės are a localized phenomenon found mostly, okay, not everywhere, but found mostly in the northwestern part of Lithuania. They were mostly sung by women, but men performed instrumental versions on the kankles, which is sort of a auto harp, okay, and or on horns or on skuduce. All right, the rich and thematically varied poetry of the sutartinės attest to their importance in the social fabric of the country. They were done at festivals, gatherings, like we said, weddings. And they also have dance sutartinės, okay? Dance sutartinės are usually humorous and really pretty spirited, even though the movements of the dance tend to be slow. The song itself tends to have a lot of excitement. Anyway, they've become almost extinct, okay, as a genre among the general population. As a matter of fact, a lot of people find them quite boring and repetitive, but they are loved and fostered by Lithuanian folk ensembles today, and they take a lot of pleasure in keeping them alive and performing them, and we often, on Independent Lithuanian Radio, play them for you, along with current upbeat rock versions. So we hope you enjoyed a little bit of background there on what a sutartinė is in Lithuanian music folklore. In the meantime, we want to bring you up to date on the weather in Vilnius, the capital of Lithuania. We're going to have a little fun with that, too, because tomorrow, Sunday, January 13th, and it's a very special day. We'll be talking about that later. It's a national holiday, even though it's Sunday, and it, you know, commemorates the massacres at the television tower in 1991. But it'll be snowing, and it'll be cold, and it'll be reminiscent of that day back in 1991. Anyway, the high tomorrow will be 19 and the low will be 11 degrees at night with snow flurries. Monday, the high will be 19 and the low will be 8. Tuesday, up to 23. Wednesday, Thursday, in the high 20s, 27, 28 degrees, and then dipping off into the low 20s as we go into Saturday and Sunday, January 19th and 20th. So, quite cold in Vilnius, the capital of Lithuania. And as I said, just for a little bit of fun, we looked at the weather here in beautiful Pear Blossom. You know where Pear Blossom is? You take the freeway out there towards Canyon Country, Palmdale, Lancaster, going out to the desert, as if you're going up to Mojave. And if you get off to go east, if you get off to, say, to go to Big Bear, or you decide to travel in the direction of, Victorville, before cutting all the way up through Palmdale, Lancaster, you'll hit Pear Blossom. You can't miss it. It's also called the Pear Blossom Highway. Anyway, just for perspective, the lows in Pear Blossom this week will be around 27, 26, 24 degrees, and the highs during the day will get up into the high 30s, low 40s. Just a little bit warmer than Vilnius, the capital of Lithuania. Now, before we cover a couple of news stories out of Lithuania right now, we want to bring you up to date on our social calendar, and the big event is tomorrow. That's tomorrow, the 13th of January, right at St. Casimir's Parish Hall, the Lithuanian Scouts Association. Now, what's different this year is we want you to take note that it will not be at Totne Namai, or at the Cultural Center on Glendale Boulevard, where everybody's used to going for year upon year. It's going to be at St. Casimir's Parish Hall, okay? So that's tomorrow at 10 o'clock. There will be everybody will gather in full uniform, the Boy and Girl Scouts, and participate in Holy Mass. And afterwards, at noon, will be the Scout meeting. Now, after the formalities and the readings of the greetings and the honors and awards that are given to the Scouts over the years, at 12:30, there will be a soiga ir laužas, which means campfire singing and just a good time. So, once again, this is a big event, annual, tomorrow at St. Casimir's Parish Hall. Now, St. Casimir's is at the corner of Griffith Park Boulevard and St. George Streets. And I would love to remind you, and will remind you, that my family, my children, my wife, we've all been part of Lithuanian scouting here in the United States, and it's been a great experience. We've met and made many friends. We stay in touch through the years, and your children will too. If they're not involved in Lithuanian scouting, you're missing one of the best organizations in the United States for keeping scouting tradition and Lithuanian tradition alive. And once again, tomorrow, come and see what's going on. Also, if you are a member of Lithuanian Scouting, your annual dues will be collected. So there'll be the enforcement provision of Lithuanian Scouting. We'll step up and look for $30 a head for you to continue to be a member of the Lithuanian Scouts Association. So, anyway, long story short, tomorrow at St. Casimir's Parish Hall, the annual meeting, and they will also commemorate the events in Lithuania in January 1991, where people were massacred at the television tower. That'll be part of the theme of the scout meeting. Okay, now looking forward a little bit into the future, past that will be the Blynų balius, okay? That is also known as the pancake ball. The pancake ball this year will be held on the 2nd of February. That's February 2nd, and that again will be at St. Casimir's Parish Hall, 6 o'clock in the evening. Always starts early and always goes late. It's the 51st, okay? 5-1. Last year was the 50th. Big deal, right? Well, here we go into the second half of the century, the 51st Blynų balius, or pancake ball, which is also known as the Lithuanian Mardi Gras. That's what it is. It's a big party before everyone fasts and goes into the Lenten season before Easter. That's where the tradition arises. And it's called the Blino Balus because the pancakes are a big deal, and the pancakes are potato pancakes because Lithuanians love potatoes. They'll be singing, dancing, and of course, lots of potato pancakes. So call the Dangola Barniene, Dangola at 818-249-7574. I'll repeat that in a minute and make your reservations. This is always a sold-out event. I mean, I'm talking standing room only sold-out events because the Lithuanian Youth Ensemble, directed by Dangola herself, performs, and the parents are there, the kids are there, and it's just so much fun and lightheartedness, and you know, this attitude of that we're all one huge family, and that's the beauty of it. So come on by, 818-249-7574, the 51st annual Blino Balus Pancake Ball at 6 o'clock in the evening on February 2nd at St. Casimir's Parish Hall. One more time, that phone number for Dangola is 818-249-7574. You know, in this segment, we always talk about the weather, and we should mention that a state of emergency has been declared in Lithuania's western municipality of Pagėgė. Now, if you don't know where Pagėgė is, that's out towards Klaipėda. That's in the Žemaitija region, out towards the coast. And it's a very low-lying area. And what's happening is there's ice jams and rising water. There was a quick thaw, so the ice melted, backed up, and the water rose. And now people are getting flooded out of their homes. The Army of Lithuania is providing amphibian vehicles to access households, and a state of emergency has been declared. According to him, 21 homesteads and 72 people are now cut off from civilization completely, even though it's pretty remote out there anyway. But they're cut off completely now because of these conditions. Unexpected flooding started on the last days of 2012 due to a quick warming and ice jams. We'll be right back.
І живе в стелеє журво, і живе в стелеє журво, та пелі, та груда, та з груда скарбуся, та пусте перпуся, а віже жаля жоля.
That, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, was not a sutartinė. Well, as mentioned earlier in the broadcast, January 13th in Lithuania is a national holiday. It falls this year on a Sunday. Many people will be commemorating by taking Monday off. What seems like ages ago, Lithuania was just a European regional superpower with an empire that stretched from the Baltic Sea to the Black Sea. But from 1989 rather to 1991, it was, for the first and probably the last time, one of the main global players, according to Edvardas Gudavičius, Lithuania's most authoritative historian, perhaps bringing back the days when Lithuania ruled territory from the Baltic to the Black Sea. 20 years ago, or rather 22 years ago now, the events were rapid. In 1988, the Lithuanian Democratic Movement, known as Sąjūdis, emerged. Under its pressure, in 1989, the Lithuanian Communist Party, which was led by Algirdas Brazauskas, split from the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. It was the only local Communist Party which dared to do so in all of the USSR. In January of 1990, Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev arrived in Lithuania begging local communists to come back to the party, come back to the herd, but he received an ironic rejection. On March 11th, 1990, the Lithuanian parliament, dominated by the anti-communist movement Sąjūdis, proclaimed the reestablishment of Lithuania's independence. Okay, we all celebrate Vasario 16, okay, February 16th. That was the original Declaration of Independence. March 11th is the reestablishment of that declaration. The independent Lithuanian Communist Party was in parliamentary opposition, but it, though trembling a little bit nervous, supported reestablishment of independence and other main goals of the Sąjūdis movement. The other two Baltic countries, Latvia and Estonia, having complicated political and ethnic internal situations, basically huge Russian minorities, proclaimed only a transition towards independence in 1990. The Estonians had a popular saying, "We'll fight for our independence until the last drop of Lithuanian blood is shed." The Kremlin refused to recognize Lithuanian independence, of course, and imposed an economic blockade on Lithuania. So from 1989 to 1991, 75% of the Kremlin's agenda was preoccupied by the issue of Lithuania and the other Baltic states. They couldn't believe it. The Kremlin tried to create pro-Moscow movements in the Baltics by fueling chauvinist feelings among the local ethnic Slavic minorities. The collapse of the Berlin Wall and velvet revolutions in the so-called socialist countries was not a major interest for the Kremlin anymore. It concentrated on preserving its own empire, of which Lithuania, Latvia, and Estonia was a part. Russia's democrats also understood that their country's future would be decided in Vilnius. The Russian democrats, with hundreds of tricolors of independent Lithuania, often demonstrated in Moscow. Then the Kremlin created the pro-Moscow separatist movements in Transnistria of Moldova, as well as South Ossetia and Abkhazia of Georgia, which are still used by Russia today. The Russian minority in Vilnius is very small. This is why the Kremlin tried to inspire a separatist Polish movement in Vilnius surroundings, and some might say they still do that today. But the local communist Polish nomenklatura's intentions were weakened by the pro-Lithuanian position of then already democratic Poland. On January 10, 1991, Soviet President Gorbachev issued an ultimatum to Vilnius, urging it to recognize the Soviet Union's rule in Lithuania. The Lithuanian parliament, led by Vytautas Landsbergis, refused. On January 11, 1991, Soviet troops stormed the press palace, where the majority of Lithuanian newspapers had their headquarters and printing facilities. Thousands of unarmed people started to hold vigils near the parliament, near the TV tower, and the radio and television headquarters. 20,000 people all the time, up to 50,000 people on some nights. The Kremlin sent elite Soviet army forces to Lithuania, such as the Alpha Group, which was used for the first time in 79, when the Soviets stormed the presidential palace in Kabul, Afghanistan. On the night of January 12th through the 13th, 1991, after beating nearby civilians, Soviet tanks and soldiers occupied the radio and television headquarters. TV journalists were turned out to the street without letting them collect their personal belongings. The Soviet army also seized the TV tower. During those attacks, 14 civilians were killed, and some 1,000 were injured. The majority of casualties took place near the TV tower. Now, if you've been to Lithuania, the TV tower is that huge tower that looks like it has a replica in Toronto. Okay, you'll know what it is. However, everybody understood the main target, of course, was the parliament, but first they were grabbing the media. Everybody who stood very close to the parliament remembers the smell of freshly made Molotov cocktails. They were made by the parliament's defenders. Here on this program, we interviewed people who were there and helped to make those cocktails, including our very own Daiva Venskus. In case of Soviet attack, the parliament defenders, after a short fight, would probably set the building on fire. On January 12, 2010, during the sitting of the Parliament's Defenders, Major General Arvydas Porčius, current Chief of Defense of Lithuania, well, the Defense of Lithuania 2 years ago, and former Parliament Defender in January 91, reminded listeners of that night 19 years ago. Then in the Parliament building, the armed men were preparing to fight. Quote, "We prepared the Molotov cocktail. Some men brought hunting rifles, as well as some sports guns, which were preserved from the post-World War II era. Some men couldn't stand the nervous pressure and went home. I don't condemn them, and I don't envy them. Maybe they were thinking about their children." He emphasized the main factor, that the Parliament's defense was being done by unarmed civilians standing in crowds of thousands outside. In Anatol Levin's book, The Baltic Revolution, the path to independence was quoted by one of the Parliament defenders. Quote, "The intention is not to win, because we all know that that's impossible to win against the Soviet Union. The intention is to die, but by doing so to make sure that Moscow can no longer lie like they lied in 1940, to make sure the whole world knows that Lithuania was prepared to fight and die for her freedom." The Soviet army refused plans to storm the Parliament only because of the crowds. The Lithuanian State Security Department recorded the talks between the Soviet officers, who said that there is too much raw meat in front of the Parliament. This meat stood near the Parliament for many days after January 13th. The Parliament was covered with posters comparing Gorbachev to Saddam Hussein. The timing of the Soviet aggression on Lithuania was not coincidental, because then the world's attention, you'll remember, was focused on the conflict with Iraq after it attacked to occupy Kuwait. The surroundings of the Lithuanian Parliament were protected by anti-tank concrete barricades and trenches. Special construction was also erected to prevent Soviet military helicopters from landing on the roof. Lithuanian television, which moved to other buildings in Vilnius and Kaunas, was rebroadcasting from the Parliament's roof until the collapse of Soviet communism in Moscow in August of 1991. Gorbachev explained the January events in Vilnius in his usual manner of lies. Ultimately, at that time, he said, in Lithuania, two equal forces stood in front of each other, bourgeois nationalists and the working people. And if our paratroopers wouldn't have interfered, nobody knows what could have happened, he said. My wife and I, Audra, visited Lithuania on the 20-year anniversary a couple of years ago in January in Lithuania, and we watched the commemorations, and we noticed that there was a different feeling in the air. You know, people are sort of, there's a melancholy feeling about what went wrong. We all were together. We all felt unity. We defeated the monster, the Soviet Union. We got freedom, and now we're not sure about the price of food and jobs and labor and a free society. People are confused. People are confused. They continue to be confused in Lithuania. The youth are leaving. Things continue to change. And unfortunately, many of the young people leaving don't have any memory of the events of 1991. Back then, the protesters huddled around makeshift bonfires, the moisture of their breath visible in the cold air. Those at the front of the barricades armed themselves with those hunting rifles and Molotov cocktails. It was the grip of a bitter Baltic winter. Tens of thousands of people had journeyed to the capital by any means possible, trains, automobiles, buses. They had answered the most important call of their lives. The only force which can safeguard the leadership of Lithuania is the people. We are inviting residents of Vilnius and other areas of Lithuania to stand guard tonight and tomorrow near the Parliament, said a statement from the president of the Lithuanian Supreme Council, Vytautas Landsbergis. These days could be crucial, he said. Our solidarity and determination are a dire necessity. An estimated 50,000 Lithuanians took to the streets of Vilnius to defend the country's fragile independence on the 13th of January 1991. Breaking from Soviet rule the previous March had not come without repercussions. The blockade had made everyday life very difficult, and inflation had risen to 300%. There was tension on the streets, and those loyal to the Communist parties began a series of counterstrikes. Something had to give. Day by day, the Soviet military presence in the city grew. Key buildings were seized. Rumors began to circulate that the parliament would be next. There were two rows of barricades erected made of tractors, trucks, and building materials from nearby sites. The enrollment of volunteers continued. Oaths were taken. Rifles were handed out. There were lots of young people that helped. They kept watch and erected barricades. Ruslanas, who just turned 17, was one of those protesters. "I left home," he said, "without informing my mother. She wouldn't have let me go. I took the Lithuanian flag. A truck gave me a lift to Vilnius, and when I got there, crowds of people were massing around the parliament. I spent the next 4 days there, and I didn't sleep a bit. People continued to pour into the city. You could distinguish those who had just arrived by the state of their shoes. If a person was walking with dirty shoes, he's been there for a long time." On the north of Parliament, events escalated tragic consequences. In the early hours of January 13th, Soviet tanks and heavily armed combat vehicles reached the city's television tower. Odd for the 16-year-old son that Anatas was at home. "My brother and I were watching the news on television when the Soviets stormed the tower. We watched as a soldier switched the camera off and the live broadcast was ended." At 1:50, the killing began. In an attempt to disperse the large number of pro-independence supporters, Soviet soldiers fired live rounds, killing 10. Two more protesters were crushed to death by tanks. One demonstrator was struck in the face with an explosive device, causing fatal injuries. The other died from a heart attack. The death of a Soviet soldier later judged as friendly fire. Hours later, the news filtered through those in the parliament. Renatas and Alfredas were in the crowd. Nobody believed that the soldiers would actually shoot. Moscow's belligerent and disregard for people's life was underestimated. In spite of the danger, Ruslanas was prepared to defend Lithuania's independence. There was a feeling of solidarity and resolve then. The mood was not of who we were standing against, but what we were standing for, he repeated. We were ready to die. Soviet leader Gorbachev denies he ordered soldiers to open fire. He did later admit that momentum for independence gathered pace as a result of the killings. "Even if they had been supported before," he said, "Landsbergis would now look like a hero in the eyes of Lithuanian," he wrote in his memoirs. In the eyes of Alfredas, there were many heroes. Tears were not seen, only hope. We were crying later when we buried our children. The entire country was mourning for them. Sporadic skirmishes between Soviet forces and pro-independence groups continued right in through summer of 1991. The scenes at the television tower in the early hours were not repeated. The eventual collapse of the Soviet Union in August released Lithuania from more than 50 years of occupation, and the restoration of independence was finally complete. 13 years later, Lithuania entered the European Union. The transition from imposed communism to the Western ideals of free market economies hasn't been easy. Again, people are confused. The country has one of the highest suicide rates in the world, suffering from an exodus of young people, educated, smart young people. The current plight angers Alfredas. Oligarchs of post-Soviet mentality are in our government. They made their fortune when others were freezing in the barricades. The lands are free of young people, and education isn't affordable anymore. After over 20 years, this is what we got? We never expected this 20 years ago. But despite the problems, Ruslanas demonstrates the spirit which originally brought Lithuanians together back then in 1991. I hope that neither me nor my